Hi, Steve Pomerantz here, host of On the Money with today's On the Money Extra, where we feature market updates and insights as well as guest interviews with noted financial experts to help you stay informed and learn the facts to make the right decisions about money. So let's get started. It's time for Real Estate Roundup. This is the time every single week we get together with noted real estate agent Terry Story. Terry is a 25-year veteran with Coldwell Banker located in sunny Boca Raton, Florida. Welcome back to the show, Terry.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
What is going on here in terms of closing? Is there something else, something new on the horizon?
There is. It's really going to create a lot of headaches and make it difficult for last-minute changes for closings within 3 days of a closing. And basically on August 1st, what's going to happen is if there are any changes, it's going to require additional disclosures, and the lender must deliver those 3 days prior to closing. So basically what will happen is if there's a change, the lender now has to reissue a notice 3 days prior to the closing. You can't do it 2 days before, 1 day before. So you're going to have that 3 day wait. And so often, Steve, there's these last-minute changes that take place, and it's going to create problems. Everything's always a snowball effect.
Yeah.
One person's buying a house and then moving to another house. You know, if they can't close on the first one, then they can't close on the second one. So there's always a domino effect in this. In some ways, it'll make the lenders get the packages over to a title company sooner so that they're ready to close. So that might be a positive side to this. But any last-minute changes are going to be a problem.
So what is someone to do? Are we talking about changes on the buyer's side or the seller side?
No, it'll be on the buyer's side because This is all lender stuff.
Okay.
And you know, one of the other things, they're combining two forms. One's called the Good Faith and Truth in Lending. And these two forms, they're putting them into a single form. I guess that's all good. But all of that has to be delivered within 3 days prior to closing. And if anything is missing and is not right, they just have to start over.
Yeah, so it's an addition of more paperwork, which can bog things down. And there's already an awful lot of paperwork to be done at that moment, too.
Right. And everything always seems to be pushed to the last minute as it is.
Yeah.
So many of these closings, the title company doesn't even get the package from the lender till the morning of closing.
I see. Well, let's move on here. Now, Florida, once again, is first in real estate. In what way are they first today?
Well, we're first in empty foreclosure homes.
What are they called? You mean the zombie homes?
That would be a zombie home.
All right.
Yes.
So this is officially our Walking Dead segment. Go ahead.
That's right. Despite a 35% decrease in zombie foreclosures in homes, which are homes somewhere in the foreclosure process that owners have already moved out, Florida has the highest number of any of the states in the first quarter for 2015.
Well, good for
we
Florida.
Have 35,000, 36,000 zombie homes in Florida. Zombie foreclosures decreased from a year ago in Miami, Chicago, Tampa. You know, that's all good. New York City has the highest total number of zombie foreclosures with 19,000 of them, which has had a significant increase year to year with its zombie foreclosures rising by 73%.
So just a lot of this property is stuck in the pipeline.
That's exactly what it is. And you see it really in the states where the judicial processes that they have to go through in order to foreclose, That's where they get stuck. And Florida happens to be one of those states.
Well, I understand, again, to change themes here, that American homebuyers are now getting more creative. We always try to figure out ways to fix a situation if it's broken. So what are some of the new things that people are doing?
Well, what we're seeing, Steve, is co-buying between relatives or friends is an emerging trend. As multi-generational homes are increasingly part of the mainstream. So we're seeing a lot of that. And the next trend is both older and younger generations buying houses together, you know, buying so that the parents can move in with them or vice versa. And we're also seeing some parents buying homes for their children and then renting the home out to their children. So that's another creative way of trying to get a home.
Yeah, because in some cases, the children can't qualify or they don't have enough for a down payment. So this solves that problem.
Right, and eventually they quit claim it over to them or, you know, trade title ownership over to them. You know, another way is through obtaining down payment assistance. And through FHA programs in particular, that enables buyers to qualify for loans as little as 3.5%. You can get sellers to contribute towards closing costs. You can get gift loans or gifts from family members. And then lastly, you always have the option, if you're in a position with your job, to move to a cheaper part of the country. We talked about that last week, different places that you can move to. Mm-hmm. You know, homes are very inexpensive or less expensive in areas like Arizona and Texas, which is starting to see huge influxes of buyers, partly because of the low home prices.
Well, you know, you mentioned some of these places out west or up north from us. When is the best time? When is the best season to sell a house?
You know, that's an interesting question. Historically, they'll say that spring is the best time of year to sell a home. But Redfin did an analysis of 7 million homes listed from 2010 to 2014. And then they looked to see how many of them went to contract within 30 days and how many of them sold for their list price or more. And statistically, they came out with spring at 39% of the homes listed in the spring in those 5 years went under contract, and 15% of them sold for more than that list price.
Okay.
But then when you go to the next category, winter, it only dropped by 1%. 38% of the homes in the winter sold, and then 14% sold for more than list price.
Not that big of a difference on average.
So yeah, so the bottom line was, and then it dropped to 36%, then 34%.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, interestingly enough, it's not that dramatic. You also have to factor in where the home is located. For example, if you take Los Angeles, Orange County, San Diego, San Francisco, spring and winter were tied for the best time of year. On the other hand, Seattle, it seemed that their best time of year was in the spring compared to the winter months. So it really depends on where you're living. I don't think there's one time of season fits all. But you also have to take into consideration, when's the best time for you to move?
Yeah, but Terry, this reinforces what you always say when I ask you the question, when is the best time to sell?
Always.
And when is the best time to buy?
Always.
Oh, said like a true real estate agent. My guest, Terry Story, is our senior producer for real estate here on the On the Money radio program. And Terry can be found at terrystory.com. Thanks, Terry.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
You're listening to On the Money with certified financial planner Steve Pomerantz. If you'd like information about guests, topics, or anything you hear on this program, call 866-MONEY01 or visit the show's website at onthemoneyradio.org.